The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Do you want a beautiful lawn? Enter True Green, the easiest way to get a great lawn. Just water and mow and they'll do the rest. Weed control, fertilization, aeration, and more. True Green is the official lawn care treatment provider of the PGA Tour. And they have a verified best price, which guarantees you the lowest price with no compromise on quality. You do you. Let True Green do your lawn care. Visit TrueGreen.com, TrueGreen.com to get the best lawn at the best price with the best people. Guaranteed.
Talk is Jericho, baby. Talk is Jericho. Talk is Jericho, mama. Talk is me.
All right, welcome to Talk is Jericho. It is the pod of thunder and rock and roll. And today, well, first of all, Merry Christmas, Happy Boxing Day, and Happy Birthday to Talk is Jericho alumni and my buddy Lars Ulrich, the drummer from Metallica. Actually, it was yesterday, December 26th, Boxing Day. But we're going to celebrate as I record this from today on. It's Lars Ulrich week. Great discussion and a debate. Speaking of Lars's birthday, the architect, one of the two architects of Metallica. I'm trying something new this week. It's the debut of the classic album Clash. And we are going to debate which album is better, Ride the Lightning or Master of Puppets, Metallica's two seminal records. And to join me, I've got two diehard Metallica fans, great friends on the show with me today, actor, comedian, musician Brian Posehn. You've seen him everywhere. He's one of those very distinctive-looking guys. My favorite is when he gets killed. I think it's his face ripped off in not House of a Thousand Corpses, but The Devil's Rejects. Great stuff. Of course, you might know him from Big Bang Theory, Silverman Show, plenty others. And of course, two-time Ring of Honor tag team champion Frankie Kazarian is here. Him and Christopher Daniels, very, very successful in Ring of Honor. Kazarian is a huge Metallica fan. He actually called me after we did the Motley Crue cast with Bubba Dudley and Dolph Ziggler and said, if you ever do a Metallica podcast, I want in. Well, here's the chance. It's the classic album Clash, Ride the Lightning versus Metallica with Brian Posehn, Frankie Kazarian. They both love Metallica. They talk about their first introductions to the band, the first time they saw Metallica live, what it's like meeting the band, and of course their favorite Metallica album and songs out of these two. We go track by track. They're very similar albums, as you'll find out. So it's the debut of the classic album Clash right here on Talk is Jericho with Brian Posehn and Frankie Kazarian. Get ready. It's coming up soon, but also get ready for Fozzy. The Judas Rising Tour 2018 kicks off January 28th, supporting Steel Panther over in Europe. We start off in Paris, France. We go all throughout Netherlands, Belgium. Where else are we going to? Spain, Germany. Lots of places, Norway, Luxembourg. So we're going to be everywhere. You could find all those dates at FozzyRock.com, as well as the dates for the U.S. leg, the next U.S. leg of the Judas Rising Tour, which is February 28th in New Orleans. And we're going all over 30 cities, from Los Angeles to San Diego to San Francisco, El Paso, Houston, Dallas, Lubbock, Chicago, Detroit, Pittsburgh, Philadelphia, New York City, Clifton Park up in Albany. We're going everywhere, man. Grand Rapids, everywhere in between. So come check us out. Seattle, Portland. Go to FozzyRock.com. Check out all the dates. And check out the VIP meet and greets. Get on those before they sell out. Nobody does pre-show VIP like Fozzy. We give you a free pre-show concert. We take requests. We do some covers that you're not going to hear, some rare Fozzy songs. Meet and greet us. Take pictures with us. Anything you want to do, if you want to get involved with that, check out the Fozzy VIP experience at FozzyRock.com. It's going to be a great, great time. All tickets and VIP packages available at FozzyRock.com. We're going to keep the rock and roll going in honor of Lars Ulrich's birthday. It's the first ever classic album Clash, featuring Ride the Lightning versus Master of Puppets with Brian Posehn and Frankie Kazarian that's coming up. Before we get to the classic album Clash, Ride the Lightning versus Master of Puppets, it is Boxing Day today, as like I said, as well as Lars Ulrich's birthday. Boxing Day used to be huge for me when I grew up in Winnipeg, home of Kenny Omega as well and Don Callis. And it was a big, almost like a Black Friday type of day. So you would get all of your money that you got for Christmas, all your gift certificates, and you'd go downtown. I come from downtown. And you'd take the bus down there and go shopping around. And I would always go find deals on albums and cassettes and records. I remember I bought Kick-Ass Vices on cassette, an Armored Saint, Delirious Nomad on vinyl on Boxing Day. Those are just a few. Every year I'd go and buy a bunch of video games, Atari cartridges. You'd go down and you'd eat. I'd always eat at Taco Time. I'd have a crispy meat burrito, and then I'd go for a muffin. It was 3M's muffin, which would have like a blueberry filled kind of a cake sort of thing, and then a big Coke. It's surprising that I wasn't a fatso, but Boxing Day was always a lot of fun. And when I came to the States, I realized that, oh my goodness, there is no Boxing Day here. It's all about the Black Friday and that sort of thing. Black Friday, paint the devil on the wall. But I was going to always wonder, what does Boxing Day mean? And what it came from was from the UK, where it's not actually boxing. There's no Boxing Day day because of Muhammad Ali, no wrestling day. But basically, back then, you would get all your prizes and your presents at Christmas, and then you would put all your old stuff in boxes and put them on the side of the road, which would enable the Salvation Army to come pick them up. And that's why it was called Boxing Day. So you would put all your boxes outside, and then, like I said, they would come take your stuff and give it to the Salvation Army. I believe that's what it's all about. I was going to look it up, but look it up. All right. So my computer is working. So Boxing Day, I've got this on Wikipedia, is a holiday celebrated on the day after Christmas. It originated in the United Kingdom and is celebrated by a number of countries that previously formed part of the British Empire, including Canada. And there are competing theories for the origins of the term. Some say it was the first weekday after Christmas Day observed as a holiday on which postmen, errand boys, and servants of various kinds expected to receive a Christmas box. That would be some kind of a present or something along those lines. So maybe that's what it is. In South Africa, milkmen and garbage collectors who normally had little of, or any interaction with those they served were accustomed to knock on doors asking for a Christmas box, meaning a small cash donation. So that could be it. So it looks like my Salvation Army celebration is dumb. So that's not the case. It is believed, although in Europe, is believed to be in reference to the alms box placed in areas of worship to collect donations to the poor. It may come from a custom in the late Roman early Christian era wherein metal boxes placed outside churches were used to collect special offerings tied to Christmas. So there you go. So I was kind of right. All depends on where you are. And in Canada, Boxing Day is a federal statutory holiday. Government offices, banks, and post offices are closed. So there you go. And it would be a big shopping day, and everyone would go have a good time and have lots of fun. And so there you go. Boxing Day, a missing tradition here in the United States, very similar to Black Friday, like I said. So a shout out to all my Canadian friends who are out shopping today or yesterday or 3 days ago, depending on your listening to this. And I always really enjoyed Boxing Day, so I miss Boxing Day, but I'm happy to be living in the States now. So without further ado, it's the debut of the classic album Clash, and this installment features Ride the Lightning versus Master of Puppets, featuring Brian Posehn and Frankie Kazarian, and here we go. All right, so I've been planning on doing this for a while. I'm calling it the Classic Album Clash, which is the name I'm going to use for now, unless I think of something better. And my idea is to do... A lot of bands have similar records early in their career. You have Ozzy with Blizzard of Oz and Diary of a Madman, or Shout at the Devil and Too Fast for Love. So I got Brian Posehn and Frankie Kazarian, two huge Metallica fanatics, and we're going to start by debating the two seminal classics, Ride the Lightning and Master of Puppets. So, you guys, this is the first one that we've ever done of this.
It makes sense, though.
It does, right?
Those
it
are,
does.
Well, for me, I mean, those are my two all-time favorite records.
Favorite of Metallica.
Yeah,
gotcha.
And Ride the Lightning, before I don't want to play my hand, but yeah.
You can.
It's definitely my top five of anybody.
Of any album ever?
Yeah.
Okay. Now, the funny thing is, so Frankie and Brian, just meeting today for the first time, but you have met Brian before, Frankie.
Oddly enough, tied into Metallica at the Big Four concert in India, which was 2011.
And to throw an extra monkey wrench in there, or not a monkey wrench, an extra bit of kismet.
I was
there too.
Yeah, you were involved, weren't you? Hanging out with Eddie? Because I remember seeing you somewhere.
I was hanging out with Charlie, and Mike was there too, Portnoy, and I'm sure at some point Eddie.
I do remember Portnoy being there.
Yeah. In between one of the sets, there was like a VIP tent area, and I saw Brian, who I'm a fan of. So I went over just like a nerd. Hey, man, I'm a big fan of your work. And I got a picture with him, and I was looking for it, and I couldn't find it.
Oh, yeah.
But I was just like, hey, man, you were super cool, so thank you.
He was nice?
Oh, yeah.
That was the first thing I asked him.
He was a sweetheart.
Was I nice?
Yeah. No, he was just nice. like, thanks, man. Right on.
I was doing Dancing with the Stars at the time, and I had to do rehearsal and then drive to India, which is a little bit of a trek from L.A. So I actually got there halfway through Slayer. So I missed Anthrax and Megadeth. Okay. So I saw the big two.
I was living in Tampa at the time, and I flew back the next night, and you were on my flight.
That's right.
Which is crazy enough,
I remember that.
So.
And I was also standing next to Dave Mustaine's daughter on the scaffolding on the side of the stage.
Nice.
So there you go. There's a little bit of the kismet. Did you like the Big Four show?
Yeah, that was great. I met Cliff's dad at that show.
Oh, so Ray.
I remember that. Sweet. Yeah, he was standing in the pit.
The
VIP pit.
Sure.
So it was a little,
yeah.
was a little less sketchy. Much,
yeah. Friendliest guy, though, right?
Yeah, he rode on my shoulders.
I crowd surfed him.
Yeah.
He spit on a couple punks.
Yeah.
But I love the concept of that show, and I still read recently that they're thinking about doing more of them.
I know most of the guys are game and want to do more. Yeah, I mean, that I would love to see that mm-hmm. show again. That's a show that I would follow, you know, like go to a couple other cities. And
be like deadheads and just follow around. Because I think the problem was, you never know for sure, but there was a little bit of issues with one of the guys in the camp named Mustaine, that maybe he was kind of a little bit
I don't know
of
who
the
you're talking
wacko.
About.
George Mustaine is one of the managers from Megaforce Records. But, I mean, I think finally that's such a cool you can't duplicate that, and it's something they only can do, but it would draw stadium crowds.
Oh, for sure.
Completely.
And that's for us fans of thrash, like that's it, you know? Like,
right.
That's our,
just to see that all together.
I think even doing those Big Four shows, and I think the guys in Anthrax would say that kind of gave them a third life. You know what I mean? Like,
that's
they've done amazing since then. And I was going to shows before that, and it was a lot of old dudes and not a lot of younger kids for a while there. And now you go to Anthrax shows, and it's people of all ages again, which is
I remember
great.
Around that time frame, Charlie, he actually asked me, what would you think if we brought Joey back? And I said, man, if you guys are doing these Big Four shows, that's the time to do it. That's also when Dave brought Dave Ellefson back.
Right.
You know, you got to do the family reunion. It did kickstart them completely because you wanted to see those lineups like that.
And the last two Anthrax
for the tiny
albums.
Google-like guitar player, leave him home. But
the last two Anthrax albums have been rad, in my opinion.
But that's kickstarted by the Big Four.
Exactly, yeah.
And I think Frank even Charlie will say that.
Yeah.
Like, that had a lot to do with them having energy for it again. And
sure.
Like, oh, shit, people like this still.
Yeah. And we got to be like, if we're going up against these other three bands, we got to bring our A game.
Yeah,
you know?
He said that in interviews that he brought his playing back up.
I think the last time I saw you was at the Anthrax gig at the Palladium, right?
Yeah.
I think I had a couple beverages, but I remember kind of hanging onto your hand as you led me through the crowd and saved me.
So romantic.
So the two albums that we're talking about is Ride the Lightning and Master of Puppets, which are sister albums. You can see, and we'll get into this, the track listing is very similar.
For
the
sure.
Is the same. The where they got the records made and the producer and all that sort of stuff. So, I mean, let's go through the ranks. What's your favorite, Brian?
Definitely Ride the Lightning.
Ride the Lightning's your favorite.
Yeah.
That's yours.
For sure.
Frankie?
Well, there's no wrong answer in this.
Right.
I mean, there's literally no wrong answer.
This is not an argument. We're just going to put it over.
And this I'll never listen to Master Puppets ever again.
That sucks. You're not going to hear that.
By the slightest of margins, Master of Puppets for me.
Okay. So, you know, I would go Master, but by the slightest of margins as well.
Can I ask both you guys which album got into, or got you into Metallica? Yeah. Was that the one? Or were you into Lightning and then heard Master?
For me was, okay, so I'll tell my story and then we can go around the round table. So for me, first was Ride the Lightning.
Okay.
And there used to be this guy, so I lived in Winnipeg, Canada, And right down the street from my house was a convenience store called Bigelow's Pharmacy. And sitting in front of Bigelow's was this little Yoda-type creature. His name was Brad Hudubiak. And
he
was a short little guy who wore the Canadian tuxedo all the time, which is jeans and a jean jacket.
Yep.
And had really bad acne, like bulbous red
hockey hair or no?
Oh, yeah, hockey, kind of like Malcolm Young hair.
Oh, nice.
Right? So and the really bad, just flaming red acne. But he was kind of like the guru of heavy metal.
Right.
He would sit kind of cross-legged on one of the curbs, and you would go see, you know, the Jedi Hudubiak and say, what albums should we check out today? And I remember he would say, you got to check out. Afterwards, he would say, oh, you have to check out, you know, Lizzie Borden, or you have to check out Raven. But the one that he said was there's this band called Metallica. You have to check them out. So I took the bus down to Records on Wheels in Winnipeg, and I found the album cover, which, of course, is one of the greatest album covers of all time. The blue electricity and the electric chair. And then you turn it over and see the band. And I remember, like, oh my God, these guys, they got zits and like bad mustaches. And it's like, they look like me.
Right.
I love it.
Denim jackets.
Right?
Yeah, angry. Yeah, yeah. Nobody's
angry.
Smiling.
Yeah. Uh-huh. So then I took it home, and my parents had one of those big old school record players that was like a big desk.
Uh-huh.
And you lift the lid and you put it on, and it starts with this harpsichord thing. Not that I really knew what a harpsichord was. I was like, what is this? This isn't heavy. This isn't as heavy as Iron Maiden. And then,
oh,
buddy. down. We got the same smile on our face. And then it just like blew my fucking mind.
Yep.
And like, this is the greatest thing I've ever heard in my life. And I still remember this day just being so into it. And then when it all breaks down, and like Lars Ulrich's the greatest drummer ever, because it's just like,
sure.
The double bass, and I was like, whoa!
Yep.
Of course, never hearing Motorhead or Overkill, knowing it was kind of a ripoff.
Right.
So that was my first exposure to Ride the Lightning. Brian?
Well, I'm a little bit older, I think. Are you?
Yeah, I'm 46.
Yeah, I'm 50, so I liked the first record, and also growing up in the Bay Area, you know, I had heard, like, demos and stuff, that thing that has Hit the Lights On that went around.
The metal.
Yeah.
No Life to Leather.
Thing that Brian.
Metal Militia. Massacre.
Slagle. Yeah,
right,
Metal
right.
Massacre Company.
That Slagle put out. I had heard that, and I'd read about them through fanzines, so I was already.
So you were in the scene.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Well, a little bit of a poser, because I have a James story. Like, I went with a buddy of mine, and it was before Ride the Lightning came out, but they had just played in the city the night before, and it was like a Wednesday, so our folks wouldn't let us drive from Sonoma to the city. But we came down on Friday to see Accept.
Oh, nice.
And we're at an Accept show, and I go up to James, and at first I went up to Kirk and go, man, you shred. And he's like, shred? I don't even cook. And I'm like, oh, great. totally making me feel like an idiot. And I, you know, we had brand new jackets and the whole deal, brand new patches. And we go up to James, and I go to him, hey, my buddies are going to start a band. What should we call them? And he looked at us and goes, almost. And that, but I was so bummed, and I wish that story ended with, and then I never listened to Metallica again. But,
so almost is like you guys almost could be in a
band. Yeah, we were posers. Yeah, yeah. So,
what a great 80s metal word, poser.
Yeah.
If you were a poser back then, you were the biggest wimp ever.
Right, but then we had their records before they were on Elektra, so like ultimately we weren't posers. We were fans, but we just weren't fans.
Pulling
we were
Don Rickles on you. They were just insulting you for being their fans, right? Yeah.
Right, but then so when that Ride the Lightning, I know I went to Santa Rosa Mall and got it and loved it. And what I remember, I had the opposite of your guy. I had a guy who in my neighborhood was the metalhead who would shit on anything you liked. Like Raven was cool. Now they suck. And
gotcha. You,
Red Forester rules and Riot. But that other guy, you know, that he was always that guy.
Mark Beal sucks. Yeah.
He was a contrarian. Whatever metal you were into.
Gotcha.
He was in something more metal.
Yeah.
Like I wrote that song More Metal Than You about this kid Dylan.
Right. Yeah. That was the tune they did with Scott Ian.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Dylan and Rob Flynn, who also made me feel not very metal one day. But we've worked that beef out. But,
he's like 3 foot tall, too. You probably step on him at this point.
But this kid Dylan was like Metallica's already sold out. Like, Ride the Lightning sucks. And I was like, what? Like, how can you turn on a band like that early? Yeah.
But you hear those stories. So you had Kill 'Em All first.
Yes.
Okay, so I
didn't have the vinyl. I remember I had recorded it from my buddy John. So I had it on cassette. So Ride the Lightning was the first thing where I actually paid for Metallica and had it in my hand. And like you said, looking at the cover's amazing. And what always stands out to me is how Cliff is raging on that back picture.
His mouth looks like a big, a sucking fish. He's just like, oh.
Yeah, and Cliff was like this god.
But you know what's funny? As Lars, I mentioned, he did the show and he was sitting right where Frankie's sitting. He said that, like you just said, when Ride Lightning came out, Fade to Black, because it had acoustic guitar or like kind of, you know, not distortion, that what everyone said they sold out.
Yeah.
That was so horrible.
I love that song because of that. Like, for me, it was like, oh, wow, they're going in another direction. And that's why I like that record more than Master, because you say the Master is its sister, or, you know, because I feel like that Fade to Black is the precursor to Sanitarium, where it's kind of the same vibe.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And I love Sanitarium. Sanitarium is a great
song. But that's
song
when they started making
song,
their leaps and bounds. Because I got to, and we'll get to your story too, Frank. But I never do research for these things, but I did go and looked. So Kill 'Em All was July 25th, 1983.
That's when they recorded it or released.
Ride the Lightning, July 27th, 1984.
Right.
1 year later.
Yeah, Master, so I was just out of high school.
Master was March 3rd, 1986, which was about a year and a half later. So look at the leaps and bounds that they basically did in 2.5 years between July of 83 and March of 86.
Yeah, it's crazy.
It's unbelievable.
Right.
You know, that's next level Fate, Beatles type progression.
And how
that's
young
the
they
same
were.
Producer on all three, right? Or no, just on Ride the Lightning and Master.
Ride and Master was Flemming Rasmussen, that they recorded those records in Denmark.
Right.
So Frankie, you're first.
Okay, so...
And how old are you?
I'm 39.
Okay, so you're the baby.
I'm the baby, but I'm in that same... So my, like, gateway band into, like, real heavy metal was Guns N' Roses.
Okay.
Because Guns N' Roses, like, 87...
That was the biggest thing.
And I was, like, in sixth grade, and that just captivated me, and I was just super into Guns N' Roses, like obsessed.
Right.
So again, going back to the gurus or the guys that shit on everything. So I literally wore a Guns N' Roses shirt every day of the week. My sixth grade photo, I'm wearing tie-dye pants and a Guns N' Roses shirt. Right. Huge fan. So this kid, Phil Sanchez, noticed that I always wore Guns N' Roses stuff, and he goes like, "Hey man." And he was kind of like, we called them Hessians.
Yeah, California for headband.
Yeah,
right?
It's like I like heavy metal, but that guy's like a Hessian, which, you know, guys that wear the dirty denims. It's like, so he comes up to me and like we were kind of pals, and he's like, "So you like Guns N' Roses?" And I go, "Oh yeah, they're awesome." And he goes, "You'll love this," and he hands me a recorded cassette of "And Justice for All" by Metallica, and he's a band called Metallica. He's like, "They kick Guns N' Roses ass," and I'm like, "Okay." So I went and before this, you know, I was exposed to Beatles and Stones and like Frank Zappa from my father.
Sure.
So I put this
all great
in
stuff.
Okay, yeah, for sure. But you know, just
different
rock
vibe.
And roll.
Mm-hmm.
I put this in, and Blackened comes on, and it just blew my mind. I was just like, it almost borderline scared me. I was like, "Oh my god!" So then, you know, diving into what's Metallica all about and then asking questions, and people like older, like brothers of friends would be like, "Oh, if you want to listen to Metallica, you have to listen to Master Puppets."
That's
and pointed me in that direction. So I kind of then backtracked, and then, you know, soon thereafter, the Black Album came out. So I was kind of in the middle of it. But so I found it through And Justice for All.
So when you went back to Ride and Master, did you find that better than Justice? Did it?
I like Ride and Master better than Justice. I love And Justice for All, but I like Ride and Master
Because it's interesting, you started in Backtrack, and we kind of came in. Like, I only had to backtrack to Kill 'Em All after Ride Lightning, but to see the progression of the band as they went further and further, you could just see.
And I was with them. Like there were the Dylans that would, like, you know. Then when Justice came out, I had guys I worked with at the record store, like, now they really sold out.
like these 9-minute songs are selling out.
Yeah. See, but I love Justice. I like that record a lot.
To me, the tipping point was the Black Album.
I even like some of the Black record.
I love
Black
it now.
Album, yeah.
At the time, I hated it because of, they sold out.
Yeah.
Where's my 8-minute Metallica song?
Right. I was working in a record store when that came out, and that, like, was the hugest thing.
The biggest
like,
thing
we
ever.
Did the midnight sale, and, like, I was working at a tower.
Oh. like, the classic Tower.
Yeah,
huh?
Yeah. We had a crazy line for the Black Album. And that was, me, you know, by that time I was in my 20s, so I was like, fucking posers, you know,
posers
these kids,
like, almost
new Metallica, yeah.
So when you were,
but I still like that record, and went and, you know, saw
it. But you grew up in the Bay Area, and you saw Metallica early on. Did you see them quite often, or did they take off and were gone pretty quickly?
They took off pretty quickly, but I still saw some great shows. And like when that album came out, they did this thing in a Phoenix Theater in Petaluma where they played two nights. And it was just like old school set and like hardly anything off that Black Album. But just, that's still one of my favorite shows that I've ever gotten to see.
Kind of the older
Metallica.
Because
it was a smaller.
Gotcha.
Yeah, because I missed them when they played with Raven. Like, I knew about these shows, but like, I live 45 minutes away. And
how are you going to get there?
Yeah.
At school the next
single
day.
Single mom, it was pretty strict. And,
yeah.
And so, yeah, I missed out on, like, I didn't get to see Kiss with the makeup in the original run.
Okay.
Like, and my friends went, and, you know, so I missed out on a lot of shows.
Out, dude.
But once I was driving, I was going to every show I could.
Right,
but,
especially in
that
area.
So I missed Kill 'Em All for One, and I missed the Dan the Green with
the classic.
The first Dan the Green. I saw the second Dan the Green.
The first was with Cliff, though.
Yes.
The famous video from Room of the Bell Tolls.
Justin and so good. Thousands of summer deals at your Nordstrom Rack store. Save up to 60% on new arrivals from Vince, Rag & Bone, Adidas, Joe's, Marc Jacobs, and more. Great brands, great prices every day at Nordstrom Rack. But hurry for first dibs. Get your summer favorites up to 60% off at Nordstrom Rack today. Great brands, great prices. That's why you rack.
Hey, this is Chris Jericho inviting you to the first ever Rock and Wrestling Rager at Sea. Picture this: rock and roll, wrestling, comedy, live podcasting, all on the open ocean from October 27th to the 31st, 2018, from Miami to Nassau. I'm bringing Hall of Fame wrestlers, some of the greatest rock and roll bands on the planet, and putting the first wrestling ring on a cruise ship ever. Don't be a stupid idiot. Make the list. Check us out at ChrisJerichoCruise.com.
Talk is Hawk is Hawk is Jericho.
So let's go through some of the records here, because when I said that they're sister albums, the lineup of songs mirror each other.
Yeah, almost identical.
They both start with the Crushing Bruisers, with the nice little
acoustic intro
with Fight Fire with Fire, and then of course Battery. So thoughts about either one of those tunes?
Well, going song to song, I go Battery. That's the tough thing.
That's the thing, right?
Battery is one of my all-time favorites. Like, I'm in San Francisco and I have to listen to Battery because that just reminds me of, you know, that.
Now, I always want to know, what does Battery mean? Is it a battery inside of him, like a power source?
Well, no, it's named after that street that
Battery
they hung
street
out on.
Oh,
Battery in San Francisco,
like,
is right
Battery
off
Park.
The Broadway. No, it's Battery Street. It's just this shitty little side street off of Broadway, which was where the Stone was and the Mabuhay and the Rock. So that's where those guys were hanging in the, and it's, so that's like their club. Battery is found in me. Like, if you came from that area, right?
Because I was wondering, like,
I'm almost positive that's what it is.
But see, the thing
is,
it's one of those really cool lyrics where it could mean a bunch of different things. Because I was, you know, can I kill the family?
The family, to me, that always meant San Francisco hardcore,
the guys. Gotcha. Because is it a power source? Is it battery, like a salt and battery, or is it the street?
I feel like I read early on that that's what he was talking about, and I hope I'm not wrong.
I remember reading something similar to that too, buying one of those magazines about what the songs were about.
Okay, so there you go,
battery street. This
So that's what you're saying. If you're going toe to toe, Battery and Fight Fire.
Yes, and Fight Fire is,
I mean, that
riff. The first
classic
time I heard that, like, going back to the vibe that you felt when you heard that, like. Like I said, I love Kill 'Em All, but when I heard that record, and that they did start off, like you say, with the harpsichord, which I was already into, like the switch, like, because I liked when Accepted that with Fast as a Shark, where they played the old school German song and then scratch it.
Like,
that's over. This is the new
thing. Yeah, this is the thing. It's interesting. If you listen to that, and anybody wants to check this out, go put on Fire, Fire with Fire. And right before it kicks in, there's this really tasty little bass riff where Cliff kind of mirrors the harpsichord. He goes like, ding, 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 ding,
oh,
ding,
yeah,
ding,
yeah.
Ding, 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 ding. And you can hear it in the back, you know.
Their playing got so much better between those records, too.
It like, really did, you know. And people bag on Lars about being his drumming skills, but
he's
nobody was playing like that.
No.
You know, that's fast stuff.
Yeah. Down picking on Fight Fire with Fire. Is I was listening to it on the way here. Just to warm up.
You know what I liked about it too, though, is as you know, having my high school band at the time, you could play those songs. They might not be perfect, but you can go bounce, bounce, bounce. It's not super intricate.
Sure.
Right.
Which I liked. It's like Iron Maiden, you could not play an Iron Maiden song, but you could pick up a Metallica song fairly, not easy, but it was easier to get. Not that you're playing it right. So Battery 2, just amazing tune to this day. You hear it live, that riff, like you said, the down picking on that riff.
Oh, yeah.
The bass line during the solo is nuts in that song, too.
Just both awesome songs, man. That's
it's
so going head to head. It's
Okay, so then the second song is the title track on both. Ride the Lightning, Master Puppets. Once again, head to head.
You gotta go Master.
You gotta go Master, but it's pretty close though,
It's really close.
Master just because that's such an iconic song. I mean, that's their most played song live, I think. Mm-hmm. And but God, the intro to Ride the Lightning. Just
It's great,
So cool.
And the thing I like about it is because it's not as mainstream or as popular, when they do play it live, it's always like a bonus.
Yeah.
You know? Because they play a lot of songs from Ride the Lightning live. They usually do three or four a night.
But Master's almost the perfect Metallica song.
I think so.
Like, that might even be
the most well-written heavy metal. Like, what's Metallica? Here it is.
Yeah.
Yes. In 8 minutes. Exactly. 36 seconds.
Exactly. Back to Justice. I have a place for one. Like,
as being,
being just the perfectly perfect Metallica song. Before I even saw the video and before I related to it that way. Like, just like, that song tells the story, like, which was something that they were, you know, well, they were always kind of, I don't know if they did that too much on the first record. I feel like the first record is just songs about just being badass. You know what I mean? Like,
heavy metal
guys,
really
telling stories.
But are you talking about songs about war?
Well, no, where they kind of start to like be, you know,
socially conscious.
Yeah, too, and then kind of where the lyrics feel more, I don't know, about something. If you know what I mean?
I got you. Yeah. We're talking about one. We're talking about a guy with you know, no arms, no legs, can't see or hear anything. But Master Puppet's a great thing, message as well. You know, your master is drugs. Chop your breakfast on a mirror. Once again, Lars is saying that there was actually a guy that lived at the Metallica mansion, wherever the hell that was, that used to just wake up and chop his breakfast on a mirror and what's up today, dudes?
Yeah.
So, you know, you could get that kind of that life stuff that started coming out there. But, I mean, the thing about Ride the Lightning for me is this is when, you know, I played bass in high school and I sang as well because no one else would sing. And it's hard to sing and play. So most of my bass parts would just be like Tom Araya, like dun 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 dun. Try and sing and play bound and down, dun 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 down, dun guilty as charged. Because it's dun 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 dun, ban dun dun dun. It's two separate dynamic
hits. Trying to get your brain to do both those things is almost impossible.
It's really hard. You know? And what was James at the time? 21 years old?
That's another thing that's astonishing is when you look back and you look how young these guys were when they composed these masterpieces. Like, look at Master Puppets and like, what were they, 24?
Not even, dude. 23?
Right.
Like, that makes me feel, every time I look at that, that makes me feel so piss poor about myself. Like, like, I've done nothing. They wrote Master Puppets when they were 23.
I could play Iron Man when I was 12.
You know? Like, I fall down for a living. These guys wrote Master Puppets when they were 23.
That's what I said to, quick segue, is that Robert Trujillo's son is going to play that tour with Korn. Did you hear about this?
Oh, no.
So Ty is 12 years old.
Yeah, he's seen that kid around.
He's going to be in Korn for this South American tour they're doing.
That's crazy.
I thought that was a joke when I first read it, but then I read the kid article.
I was talking to Rob about it, and the kid is a monster. And that's what I said. When I was 12, I could play Smoke on the Water, Iron Man, and the theme for Peter Gunn.
Yeah.
Dun, 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 dun. And I would lose it. And this guy's playing Korn stuff. So
I watched a clip of his band, The Helmets.
The Helmets, yeah.
And do they shred? They were really good.
They're great, man. But so you're talking about the shredding abilities of Metallica. And once again, too, I think Metallica, just to bring this up now, has had the greatest bass players with the, I'm not going to say worst bass production, but you can never, except for the Black Album, you can never really hear what the bass player is doing.
Mm-hmm. I think, really, on those Cliff records, you don't think so?
He's lurking in the background. I always equate him as like a really big, like whale or sea creature that's under the water lurking, and it comes up from time to time. But a lot of times, you don't hear it because he uses a lot of distortion on his bass.
I feel like they let him shine on the instrumentals on each record, though. Like,
but if you want to listen to Cliff Burton bass tracks on YouTube with just bass and drums,
right?
you hear a lot of stuff that you don't hear on the record.
But he's all over Orion, and you know
he is. But you're talking about Ride the Lightning, for example. Yeah. He's blending in with the rhythm guitar, but there's a lot of intricate shit. But he has that distortion going on.
I've done that just recently. Listened to isolated bass tracks from Ride the Lightning just to try to figure out parts because I play bass, and it's just like, what?
Yeah.
I didn't even hear that.
I never heard that.
I can't believe it's this distorted.
There's so much
overdrive on it. Yeah.
He had that Lemmy distorted bass going on, and plus with the wah on it, it was a whole bunch of weird shit going on. So
it's awesome, though. That's what made him Cliff, you know?
Yeah, like, just... what a great player and a great, you know, the perfect part, like the leader of the band almost musically at that point in time, right?
And this is, you know, the reason these two albums, I think, are, you know, where they are in thrash metal and Metallica history is because of Cliff's contributions, you know, because he was taking them in that direction. I mean, obviously, Kill 'Em All is what it was. It was, you know, their demos and the stuff they wrote with Dave. But, you know, they matured, like you said, so quickly as songwriters and performers. And a lot of that is because of Cliff's influence.
Cliff was teaching them about melody and about harmony and song structure and all that sort of thing.
It definitely shows because these two are the two best Metallica
records. And you can hear it. You guys, Brian?
No. I'm just
you can hear it in the third tracks, and this one's easier on the Ride side, From the Bell Tolls versus The Thing That Should Not Be.
Right.
Both great songs, but I mean From the Bell Tolls.
Yeah, I would go with that for sure.
That's no-brainer, right?
Yeah.
You know, but the classic Cliff Burton bass solo at the beginning.
From the Bell Tolls, A Thing That Should Not Be is so heavy, though.
Yes,
really so heavy.
Yeah. Yeah, I love the reappearance of Cthulhu on Hardwired.
Right. Yeah.
He comes back again. It's like Dream No More.
Yep,
Cthulhu is waiting.
Yeah, that's right,
but that's another thing. Like, you would never really hear much about Cthulhu in a Motley Crue song.
No, I know. I love that. Yeah, that's one of the things. Two of my favorite bands, Metallica and Maiden. Well, and also Anthrax, where they would bring in literary references.
A lot of Stephen King.
As a dork who read a lot, I was like, oh wow, these guys.
I love that they would bring the Stephen King stuff in. You know, I'd always try and write my own Stephen King theme songs because of Anthrax.
Yeah,
right.
I did one called Stranded that was based on Survivor Type, where the guy has to eat his own hand to survive on the island. He's stuck on a desert island.
Right.
So I wrote a song called Stranded that was about that.
Nice. Does this exist anywhere?
There's probably a really bad demo of it somewhere where I'm singing and playing out of tune and out of time. But yeah, so the third, okay, so we're giving it to For Whom the Bell Tolls.
Yeah, For Whom the Bell Tolls.
Right.
Are there weak tracks on it? Because I was trying to think, like, Escape is like the weak track on Ride the Lightning, and it's not a weak track.
That's the joke. The song that even they don't like, that even James
but
doesn't
like.
I like it.
I like it, too, and we'll get to that.
Sorry.
That's all right, but I agree. But there's
trying to think. There's no
standards.
Either record has a track where you go, nah, I don't need to hear that right now.
No, but here's the once again, though. We started with the Thrasher, then we did the title track, then we did the mid-tempo heavy one.
Oh, yeah, it is the same vibe. Yeah, and then
now we've got kind of the starts slow. As a ballad, gets heavy at the end.
Yeah.
In Fade to Black and Sanitarium. Now, this one's hard.
That is so hard. Those are both two of my favorite songs in life.
Like, yeah,
you know, for the same reason, because I like the vibe that both of them, you know.
I'm going to have to go with Fade to Black.
I'm going to go Fade to Black.
Are you going to Fade to Black?
Yeah.
Frankie?
I'm going to keep with the trend, Fade to Black.
Yeah.
Because it's their first and arguably their best ballad, quote unquote.
Right.
You know, that was their first sellout song.
You know,
it's the first time they sold out. You know, they've sold out 50 times since then. But that was it. And it was just, you know, I kind of wish I could go back in time and just have listened to that album when it came out just to, you know, experience it. But it's just such a... And the lyrical content is so, you know.
I'm actually pulling up the lyrics right now.
Oh, okay,
there's some great lyrics in there. But even so, like the harmony part at the end. That's one thing I always loved about Metallica is they have such great harmony parts that you never really think about. Like, there's that one in Master and there's the one in Fade to Black where it's real intricate and Maiden-esque.
Oh, yeah, I know exactly the part. Yeah.
But not every song. In certain parts, they'll put it in there and it's just like it really, really hits you.
It's the dynamics in Fade to Black when it kicks in.
When I was listening to Ride the Lightning, the title of that song, today there was a Maiden moment where I was like,
in Ride Lightning?
Yeah.
I always loved Death Greets Me Warm, Now It'll Just Say Goodbye. Yeah. I mean, that was a good one. And the way he sings, Emptiness Is Filling Me to the Point of Agony. Yep. I always love that. Agony.
Yep.
But as a teenager, too, like for me, I grabbed onto that song because it was like this feeling that you can't, you know, like even if he's not being super specific, there's like this vague kind of, ah, oh, man, you know, life kind of sucks. And, yeah, and getting
lost.
Picked on and, yeah, kind of not figuring things out and being depressed or whatever. Not that I was a depressed kid.
No, but you have those feelings. Something,
yeah, when you're kind of grappling with these weird, and you're like, Metallica gets me. You know, it's like the same reason like Subdivisions is one of my all-time favorite things where it's like, these older guys totally got what, and Metallica wasn't much older than me. Metallica was like by 1 or 2 years older than me.
But that's such a
but
great.
Like Rush doing Subdivisions was a thing in high school where it was like, oh, these guys know. They're up in Toronto and they totally know what it's like at my high school.
Be cool or be cast out.
Yeah, you know what I mean? It was that kind of vibe.
And I like the vibe that we were talking about the Metallica lyrics because once again, my big things was Maiden and Metallica. Those were always my one and two. And to a lesser extent, Kiss. But Kiss was all about sex. And Maiden was all about history, and you could learn real things about, you know, the Samuel Wars Taylor College.
You're a big Van Halen guy, too, right? Yeah, Van Halen was just partying.
But even at that time, Van Halen, like you're talking about 84, 85, Roth had just left, and they started getting keyboardy, so I liked them, but it wasn't the same.
No.
But then Metallica came in, and those were lyrics that spoke to me, and the you said the teenage angst.
Right.
And the feeling, I remember the first time I met James, thanks for the music, man, and thanks for your lyrics. You helped me through. I almost started crying. I was 39 years old.
That's him.
Yeah, I knew Lars, and Lars is cool. Lars is Lars, but James, that's the guy.
The lyrics for this song.
His lyrics.
He spoke to you.
And his upbringing with his mom dying of, you know, Christian Science cancer and his dad. Like, my parents were divorced. You said you had a single mom.
Yeah.
I don't know what your situation was, Frankie, but you could feel. Whatever situation you were in, Metallica was there for you.
Yeah, for sure.
And they, I know they've gotten accused in the past of that song being about suicide, but I know I've also read that, like, you know, that's one of the most common things they get is people coming up to them thanking them for that song because that kind of, in a way, talked them out of it.
And that's
music is music, but that's pretty damn powerful.
Yeah, you can sit
and listen to your favorite band, you know, talk you out of a feeling, you know, that you maybe don't matter as much as you do. That's powerful stuff. It brings you to tears when you meet the person that wrote it. You know,
you could put on Fade to Black, and to an extent, Sanitarium is like that too. There's some great lyrics in there, but it's more of like, you know, the crazy guy in the asylum. But you could put those songs on, and even if you were in a really bad mood, and even though the lyrics might seem depressing on the surface, you feel them. It would make you, it would uplift you, you know? Like, I always love that. Kill is such a friendly word.
Yep.
You know, I got some death to do. Like, I'm not going to kill anybody, but I want to punch
something.
It made
you not feel alone or whatever. Yeah, that's the biggest thing for me.
You know?
It's like,
especially in this time frame, too. And it might have been a little bit different, Frankie, when you got into Metallica. But for us, if you met another Metallica fan in 86, 87, it was kind of like a rare thing. Like, you're like, Metallica? Hey, dude, what's up, you know? One of my best friends I still to this day am friends with, I met him because we were walking across a park in Canada. I was walking in Winnipeg. I was walking home, and he was walking home. We walked past each other, and there was two of them and two of us, and he had a Metallica Master Puppet shirt on. And I said, "You like Metallica?" I had a Master Puppet. He goes, "Do you like Metallica?" I said, "Yeah." He goes, "Let's drink."
Cool.
Nice. New friends, right?
All it took was a t-shirt.
That was it. Yeah. But, you know, it was the same. Was that the same for you?
Yeah. Well, yeah, my two life friends from high school. It was Metallica. It was the bond. Well, Maiden and Metallica.
Yeah.
Those were the two big ones.
Same with you, Frankie?
Yeah, like, same thing. Like, one of my best friends to this day, like, if we do anything Metallica related, if it's going to a concert or going to see the movie or whatever, he's always with me. And we stay in touch, but it doesn't matter. Like, if we don't talk for a couple of years, we'll pick up the phone. And, like, again, you're bonded.
Yeah.
You know, you remember I went to my first Metallica concert in 94 with this guy, and, you know, I'm going to go see him in July with his
stadium.
Guy. It's just cool.
Are you going to go to that?
I haven't made plans yet, but the guy I'm thinking of, he lives in Phoenix, and when Metallica played the Fonda around Christmas, they did right before the record. Came out. They did a one-off at the Fonda. It was like a small theater here in town. I called him 2 days before, and I was like, I think I can get tickets. He's like, let me know as soon as you know. And then I, you know, confirmed it, and he drove out. And, like, he's always, you know,
Did you get tickets to the band? Are you friends with them or if they're managers?
I bugged Hammett.
Okay, so you know, so now here we are. And so you know Kirk.
Yeah.
Is he like your best
of that, yeah,
contact
absolutely.
Or friend in the band?
Yeah, and I've known Robert for a while too.
Right.
You know, that's why it's a trip to hear about his little boy playing.
Dude, it's crazy.
I've seen that kid jumping in like a trampoline over at Scott Ian's house like just a couple of years ago. That's
name,
crazy.
Name jumper?
Yeah, no, but you know what I mean? Yeah.
How about you, Frank? You ever met anybody in Metallica?
I actually have. I in 2004, they were touring for the...
That would be St. Anger?
Yeah, St. Anger with Godsmack. And this is when I was in TNA, when TNA first started going to Orlando.
Mm.
And Raven, of all people, got...
not the band. The
Raven, yeah. Not,
I
Raven,
knew
not
who
band.
You meant. I
had to say that.
Raven, yeah. Scott Levy.
I knew
Levy.
Wrestling and
yeah.
metal.
Take control!
Yeah, Scott Levy. Yeah, got tickets. Anyways, he was able to get us tickets through Dale Torborg, who played the Demon
right,
Kiss.
Right.
And so myself, Matt Bentley, and Johnny Devine went, and Raven didn't want to go for some reason.
Yeah.
Said, you guys go. So we went, and we were able to get backstage. And we were able to meet Kirk and Rob.
Mm-hmm.
And they actually sat and talked and, like, chatted us up and were super cool.
Yeah.
James was, like, I think they said he was under the weather, and he walked by real quick. But, like, James is the one I always wanted to meet. And Lars, we didn't meet. And then... Several years later, my buddy Chris at Retro Rex Studios had Kirk at his booth and brought me over, and I got a book and chatted with him for a little bit. So
that's
I can't
cool.
say I'm friends with any of them, but I have met him.
Yeah.
And it's one of those cool things. Like, those are my heroes, and I met them, and they were rad.
Yeah,
and they
right,
were
right,
super
yeah.
cool, man.
You know, we've done a couple, not tours, but we did a tour called Soundwave in Australia,
mm-hmm.
which was a stadium tour. There's about... 20 bands on it, and you would go from stadium to stadium throughout Australia. There were 6 shows, and Metallica was the headliner. So the first night we show up, they had a party for everybody, like a pre-tour barbecue. And I always remember, like, you know, everybody would go. We got all the tour managers got invitations, and they bust everybody out to the stadium where they had a big spread. I remember my our drummer was like, there's no way Metallica's going to be here. Like, as if James is going to be greeting guys as you come off the bus. And we pull up, and there's James greeting guys off the bus. And Lars is there. And
so cool.
Kirk, everybody was there. His band attendance was mandatory. And everybody, like, there's a lot of baby bands, and they were just so freaked out to be around Metallica. And Lars had, he knew some people's names, and... I've known Lars for a while, and I was like, how do you know these guys' names? He's like, he got his assistant to put together a book of all the bands and pictures of them and their names. And he looked through it for a couple of days just to maybe familiarize himself with some of them.
It's pretty cool.
That's cool, pretty man. Cool, right?
How many people would do that?
That's
like,
what I mean.
Go out of their way to
hardly
like, you
any.
Know.
And
exactly.
that's
especially at that level.
At that sure. level. Yeah. And to have a party with, and then, dude, this is fanboy central. They're coming up. They go, Lars, I'm good. And I was like, that's pretty classy. Like, that's some cool shit.
That's
you know?
Cool to hear, because it's always seemed like they're cool to younger bands.
Right.
Like when they were taking the Sword out a couple of years
mm-hmm.
ago. It was like, wow, how'd they even know about the Sword?
Yeah,
like,
but Lars was a big fan.
Yeah, that was pretty good.
I saw them with Days of the New. They took them out when they were super young.
Yeah, just young bands. So they got some class.
Caius, too, they took out in there.
Even
early
right
90s.
Now, they're taking out, besides Volbeat, they're taking out some band in Europe, Kavura Talk.
Oh, yeah.
I don't even know how to pronounce it. Some Norwegian.
I wouldn't even try that
Viking.
Word,
We love beer,
I know exactly
band,
who you're
whatever they are.
About,
but they've always had that vibe. So let's get back to side 2 of Ride versus Master, starting with another out of the gate kick ass thrasher in Trapped Under Ice versus Disposable Heroes.
I'd go Trapped Under Ice.
Wow.
Well, yeah.
Nice.
Well, I mean,
okay.
That's my record. So
that's
record. And I love Disposable.
I gotta go Disposable.
I get
me,
it
for me.
I go Disposable just based on lyrical content, just because you know that's when they really first started taking that turn towards awareness
war.
Of exactly
for
of
sure.
Political
back to the front.
Exactly.
You will do what I say. When I say back to the front.
Predecessor to one.
To
for
one.
Sure.
Yeah. James sings a lot about war, even to this day, and just the horrors of
bred
war.
To kill, not to care. Like, what a line, you know? Like
left alone with only friend. Alone, I clench my gun. Oh, it's deep stuff. He's 22 years old.
Yeah.
What's wrong with you?
I know. It's so hard to pick, though.
I know. But then again, Trapped Under Ice. Like what a the worst death.
Yeah.
And what a great visual, you know?
Yep.
Amazing guitar solo at the beginning of that from Kirk.
It's the way he yells, Freezing! Like,
it's
just awesome.
It paints
a
picture.
Like, they played that. Have you seen them play that live?
I feel like I had to.
I saw that. They played it once or twice last tour, and I happened to catch it.
It's not one of the ones they got,
I mean, you got to think, too, for Lars. Like, that's that's a fast one to play.
They play that in Antarctica when they played there? They had
it. They better
have to.
You know, and that's the thing, like... like Lars's swing on Master is much better. It's not as much balls to the wall, like
right.
like Disposable Heroes, like bam, why am I dying? That beat is very not funky, but you know, a lot of musical maturity there,
right.
And great bass playing from Cliff on Disposable.
Oh yeah,
lots of little nubbins.
Are we getting into this? Are we gonna pick which album art is better? Because they both those are two of the most iconic.
Let's do it now.
I mean, album covers in thrash and metal. Period.
I think. What do you think, Brian?
I go Lightning.
Lightning, yeah.
Yeah, for sure.
I think Master's more iconic. But if I was going to pick one to put up as a poster on my wall, I would choose Ride as well.
It's more kick-ass. It's more kick-ass metal.
And more metal. And the colors, yeah. The blue.
I like blue and purple.
The electric blue.
I like Lightning too. Yeah. Just that electric chair. It's just so cool looking.
Did you see the, what was the movie called?
Through the Never.
Did you see Through the Never?
Yeah, yeah.
When they bring the electric chair prop down, it wasn't quite as cool as a prop. With like the whatever you call those, like the
Tesla
lightning
coils.
Thing. Yeah, Tesla coils.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's so tough because Master's such an iconic cover too.
Well, and even because when they did the tour with Ozzy with the stage set of like the actual crosses, you could build that. It'll look cool.
Yep.
I also loved Master a couple of the little details. One, the army helmet on the dog tags, and then in the background. There's eyes with
the puppet strings.
Oh,
the
strings
leading to the crosses. Yeah. You can see like eyes in the sky.
You have to really look at it.
It's a very that's a little bit of real ethereal, superpower, supernatural shit going on there.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah.
You know. And then let's look at the how about the band pictures on Master Puppets. Where they have all the noodles and they're just drinking.
Oh, there's like Heineken bottles. Just looks
right.
That was their house.
Started just looks to like really push Alcoholica. It was the beginning.
But James looked so cool in that. I remember he had the ripped up jeans and the long blonde hair.
Yeah, they were living the life. Like, yeah,
they were young and drinking and all that sort of stuff. And I think, too, there's a great photo shoot from the Master era where they're out in the snow. Remember that one?
Right. Oh, yeah.
They've all got like kind of like leather jackets, scarves, but they're out in the snow. It must have been in Denmark when they were making the record.
I feel like that was the first time album where you started seeing them drinking imports. Like they always had import beers, and you're like, oh, wow, they're drinking the fancy stuff.
They're making money. They're making money now.
They're not Schaefer or Black Label.
It wasn't PBR anymore. Past Ribbon or whatever.
For 4 years of my life, I drank nothing but Coors Light. When James was going through his Coors Light
phase. Nice.
Coors Light in the cans. Simply because James did.
James did. The old Pop Tops. Yep. Remember,
got to drink a bunch of them, but
That was funny. Remember the Alcoholica? That was the big name for them.
Yeah, for sure.
And I remember one time James had a shirt on that said, it wasn't Mothers Against Drunk Driving. It was
Drunks Against
Mad Mothers. Like, what a horrible thing, right? Like, think about now that we're all adults with kids. It's just like, what a bunch of punks, right?
Yeah.
You know, but that was what they were. They were known for that.
Sure.
Of being the rebellious teenagers.
Unapologetic, man.
Unapologetic.
Smirnoff.
Yes, Smirnoff. What's a Smirnoff?
It's just the nastiest.
Worst.
Yeah.
It was Smirnoff and Jägermeister.
Yeah.
They were always drinking that shit. I remember, like you said, okay, I got to try and drink Jägermeister and take a sip of that. And it still to this day makes me want to throw up all over the place.
I can't even smell it.
And we thought we were high end drinking Stoli, but it is compared to Smirnoff.
And so then after that is then you got the possible stinker, as you said, the one that
it's
Escape versus Leper Messiah.
I'd go Leper Messiah on that.
I
like Escape, but it's the weak link. But Leper Messiah is not a weak link. Is there a weak link on Master?
No,
there isn't.
I might
Escape. I hate even calling it that. But you're comparing eight songs,
sure,
it's number eight.
I might go with Escape on that, and I have some reasons for it. What about you?
I think Leper Messiah is the better song. My favorite of two is Escape.
The riff is killer,
and because I love that the breakdown part.
Again, going back to the teenage angst, Leper Messiah is a great tune. Just anything that's got a little bit of a bass solo on it, I'm going to love it. But I love the lyrics from Escape. There's a couple that stand out to me this day. That I know I'm my own best friend.
Right.
I always love that. I'm an only child.
Yeah. Me too.
And sometimes I would feel that. I'm my own best friend. Life's for my own to live my own way.
Yeah, no, I know.
Right?
That's like, a great song. Yeah.
That to me was like, life's for my own to live my own. Right there with the sirens.
I was just playing it as I was driving here because I was like, well, this is the weak link, but it's so great.
It's, right.
And means a lot to me still. Yeah,
I agree. Yeah. And it's funny because when they did Ride the Lightning in its entirety at the Orion Festival a couple of years ago, it was always the big thing. James had never played Escape. He hated it. And the reason is because that was, they were told, you know, the typical story.
Did you go to that?
I did not go to that.
I was in Orlando performing stand-up, and I remember I was watching it streaming when I wasn't on stage, and I was so bummed I couldn't be there.
I went the next night when they did the Black Album, which was great, but I wanted to see the ride. But the one about it was that, I guess, I'm not sure if this is correct, Metallica nerds, please tell me, super fans, that they were told to write something accessible by, you know, Roadrunner or whoever it was, Banzai in Canada, Banzai Records, Megaforce. And that was kind of what they came up with, a little bit more of an accessible thing. Mm. And the reason why it could work is because I had a bunch of friends that hated Metallica. Because you got to figure 1985 was all about, you know, Rat, Motley Crue, those type of bands, Twisted Sister.
Yeah.
Some of them great bands in their own right, but Metallica stood out like sore thumbs.
Mm-hmm.
And they refused to listen to Metallica. So there was a guy called Drew Jones, not to be confused with Brad Hadubiak.
Yeah.
And I said, I got the new Rat demo to play for you. My cousin lives in L.A. sent me the new Rat demo. It's got Robin Crosby singing, and I played him Escape.
That's brilliant, man.
He loved it. He goes, this is great. I go, you love it? He goes, great. Yeah. Robin Crosby singing for Rat. I love this. I go, yeah, it's Metallica. You like Metallica?
That's so awesome.
So I always liked that, my little scam about it, you know? Right. So that meant something to me as well, right? But finally, so James did not like that song because of the accessible, and then they finally played it live and kind of got the monkey.
Wasn't there like the build-up before they played it? Didn't he go like, okay, okay, we're going to do it,
I guess.
You know, all right.
I love that riff, though.
It's a great riff.
Yeah, and that breakdown you were saying. Yeah,
you know, and once again, in the middle of all these really heavy, thrashy songs on that album, it's a nice little break. It's a mid-tempo break. It's kind of a cruising type of a tune. So, you know, I gotta.
And that chorus is really, like you were saying, it's super memorable.
Yeah.
I feel no pain, but my life ain't easy.
I know my own best friend. I think the lyric is, I'm my own best friend.
I'm my own best friend.
It doesn't really make sense. I'm my own best friend. And then we get the battle of the instrumentals. Even though they're out of sequence, because Orion is track 7. And Cthulhu is track 8.
Right.
But for creative licensing, I'm going to
flip them.
We'll put them both together. So it'd be Orion versus Cthulhu. Frankie?
For me, it's Orion simply because I play bass guitar. And when I first picked up the instrument, that middle part was one of the absolute first things I wanted to learn.
Can you play it?
Oh, God, yeah.
Yeah.
I can pretty much play the whole song, not nearly at the expertise of what...
Right.
That middle breakdown part, it's just something about it. Because there's so much dynamics in that
song.
There's
also a great solo after that part with the
distorted. It sounds like guitar. I thought that was guitar for years.
Yeah, it took a while to figure out which solo was Cliff's, right?
And Cthulhu is just such a... Like,
that part's space?
Spooky, yeah.
And
the
Orion?
Thing you just did?
Yeah.
Yes.
Wow. Really?
It took me years to figure it out.
And then it's a harmony part. So that's all bass, which you don't know, but in the liner notes it does say solo Hetfield, solo Burton, solo Hammett.
Right,
you know?
Cthulhu is such a, like, eerie, spooky, that the first couple notes is so cool. But I just, Orion has got a very special place in my heart for that reason.
For that reason,
to learn that. Yeah.
What do you think, Brian?
They're both tough again, but Cthulhu.
You got a Cthulhu?
Yeah.
It's, and once again, there's another, that's the third appearance, or the third of three appearances of Cthulhu.
Right.
Tied into Metallica. What do you like better about that?
The vibe, just the mood, I think. And I love Orion, and I love when it came out, but that was the first time I felt that was when I heard Cthulhu, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, if you're comparing tracks, I'm going to go that one.
Because once again, it does say, because I'd always heard about this bass solo on the Metallica albums, and Ride the Lightning was the one I had first.
Right.
And it says in the liner notes, again, lead bass by Cliff Burton on Cthulhu, but he's so... not far down in the mix, but it's very distorted. Like you said, you didn't even know.
Right.
So you can hear it throughout, but I was like, where's this bass solo?
Yeah.
Where is it? They were talking about Anesthesia, which was
on the first. Yeah,
but there are some tasty riffs in Cthulhu, for sure.
Cthulhu's, I was just listening to it yesterday, and the ending is so cool, because I remember I looked and I was like, the song's almost over, and I looked at my iPod, and there's like 2 minutes and four seconds left, because the ending is so long and drawn. Exactly. Which is cool.
Yeah, exactly.
Right, right.
Like, that's just so cool, man.
It's,
like,
they
it's
just,
epic, yeah.
Sure,
yeah,
very epic. Good word, yeah.
You, there's certain songs, like, I always think of Hotel California, on a dark desert highway, cool wind in my hair. You can feel that as right. you hear it. Cthulhu, it feels like there's a monster, whatever mm-hmm. Cthulhu is, oh, from right. the sea or from the depths of hell.
Right. Yep.
You could dun, 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 dun,
and
dun,
headphones comes, yeah. in your room, looking at the looking at the album,
yeah.
and going, what is this thing?
Well, yeah, exactly.
And then, but, you know, and knowing, you know, that it was a Lovecraft or Lovecraft.
H.P. Lovecraft,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, yeah.
Another thing too that I forgot to bring up before. Nothing which eternal die, stranger eons, death may die from thing that should not be. Mm. It's also on the gravestone on Live After Death by Maiden, or Eddie's coming out of the
wow.
grave. On the gravestone, it says that exact quote.
Huh.
A little bit of a, you know, Lovecraftian connection.
That makes
there.
Sense, yeah, yeah.
Metallica just played China a couple months ago, and as I'm sure you guys have heard, when you play China, there's certain lyrics you can't sing.
Yeah.
They won't allow you because they're very communist.
Uh-huh.
So, you know, like Maiden couldn't play Power Slave because
right.
we're not slaves. Or I think Metallica couldn't play Master of Puppets.
Oh, wow.
So there was a bunch of holes in their set, and they played Cthulhu.
Oh, cool.
Just recently for the first time. You can watch it on YouTube. It's cool to watch them because you can tell that, like, I'm sure they hadn't rehearsed it a lot.
Right.
And they're kind of all gathered in a circle watching
each
other,
yeah,
which
yeah,
is
yeah.
real cool.
That is cool.
Band shit.
Did you guys
know?
Ever hear that? And I don't think it's a rumor. I thought it was confirmed that Lars almost had Geddy Lee produce Master of Puppets.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh my god. You
and
just blew my
mind. World just exploded.
I want to say it's been confirmed. I mean, I'm gonna get shit
that.
On by all the huge
I've
Metallica.
I've never people. Heard that, but that's amazing.
I want to say I read it a year or so ago, and it blew my mind too. It said Lars was talking to Geddy Lee about producing it, and the only reason they didn't is because their schedules didn't coordinate.
Huh.
And I'm just like, that's unbelievable. Imagine what that would have sounded like. Or just like
which record,
just,
Master?
I believe Master.
Oh
yeah.
Wow.
We're looking up right now to get some clarification. And just to keep the conversation rolling as I look, another rumor that I heard, which I think might actually be true, is that Les Claypool tried out for Metallica.
Oh, yeah, that's true. Yeah, they say that in Monster.
Creeping death. Creeping death.
Yeah, they say
all right, here
good.
We go. Geddy Lee says he almost produced Metallica's Master of Puppets.
How about that?
Wow.
All right, he has confirmed the longstanding rumor. It's sort of true. There was some discussion with Lars back in the day about working with them before Master Puppets came out. There was talk. I was friends with their management. I met Lars in England. I remember going to see them here in Toronto. That's when Cliff Burton was still around before the tragedy. It just never came together. I like their band a lot, but it never came together. I like Metallica. I've got respect for them, but you won't hear too much speed metal or death metal in my house. So there was some talk.
Sure.
But it never actually happened.
Confirmed.
Yeah. Old man. They're not death metal, but yeah. Yeah, I know he's...
yeah. Come on, Geddy.
Yeah.
So, somewhere in an alternate universe, Posehn's head just exploded.
I know. Yeah. I was just thinking about that. Yeah.
Yeah. And then, of
where
course,
Trump didn't win and Getty yeah. recorded about their master.
Hillary's the president and yeah. Getty's on tour with Metallica.
Yeah.
And then, of course, the final, even though we've reversed the sequences a bit, but we're talking about Damage Incorporated versus Creeping Death.
Oh.
I mean, once again, I mean, all these songs are...
That is... The hardest thing. That's
is that Sophie's the hardest
choice.
One?
Yeah, because those are two like really amazing records. Picking your children. Yeah,
Sophie's
yeah.
choice of metal right there.
Yeah. Those are both like classics.
Oh,
yeah.
Dude, I know, right?
Yeah.
I
mean, Damage Incorporated is less of a. I mean, well, they're both classics.
But Creeping is like an anthem that they
anthem,
do
yeah, is what I'm, yeah.
fairly often live.
Yeah.
I love
But Damage Incorporated just rips.
Oh, dude.
It's such an
unbelievable
classic
song.
Metallica track. Just,
oh, there's so much
It makes
to
you want
to
flip things over.
Oh, yeah.
It makes you
want
to.
It does.
Like,
and yeah. once again, great bass intro, of course, the Damage with the fade in. That's another one. I remember reading the lyrics. Bass intro by Cliff Burton. At first, I was disappointed that it's just the...
Yeah.
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 But Creeping Death... where it's got the hear this little
triplets.
Oh, it's so great.
Yeah, and that's almost the when we were talking quintessential Metallica songs, that's got to be up there too. Yeah, Creeping.
Absolutely. Yeah, you can't
up there with Master.
Oh yeah, I picked Creeping out of these two simply because the first time I saw them, just the feeling I got when I started chanting "Die."
Yes.
Yeah.
It's still to this day as a grown ass man, well, somewhat of a grown ass man. Just when that part comes on the planet live, I just like I could probably take a human life or two at that point, just screaming "Die."
Is it taking a human life though, or is it like being in a mosh pit at a hardcore gig? I think it's like everyone together, like "Die."
That energy,
it's almost like
fight,
just really working in the army.
Fun, cool. It's just everybody yelling.
I guess that's
at the
just
same
it.
Time.
That's just the energy that.
But
you know?
Also to show how things have changed in the world, because when this first came out, they were chanting "Die."
Yep. Yeah.
You could not play that for your sister or your mother. This is right. What is this Satan? Panic devil music.
Yeah.
Now it's like it's just Seek and Destroy has strippers throwing big black beach balls at each other.
Right.
What do you think, Brian?
Between those two songs?
Yeah, between the two. Yeah. Pros and cons.
Creeping.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Gotta go Creeping.
For the same reason, just because to me that's the quintessential. But then the other track I love so much.
Yeah.
And I'll get in my car and listen to that and probably get in an accident.
And also, too, I love the verse when Newstead was in the band. Slaves! Hebrews born to the kill! You know, he would do
a little bit
almost a death metal.
Yeah, a lot of times he sang the whole last chorus by himself,
right?
And it was killer.
Yeah.
Like I miss that guy. He was great live. Yeah, I never got to meet him either, but
it's almost like he's become the forgotten man in Metallica. Because they always talk about Cliff, rightfully so. You know, he gone way too soon.
Right.
And Robert. Everyone loves Robert.
But
best
Robert
choice.
Was already like a metal god. Robert had done Infectious Grooves. He'd done Suicidal Tendencies and Ozzy and all this stuff. And he already
Black
had
label.
This thing.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Newstead was a fan, but also from, if you knew your
Flotsam
shit.
And Jetsam,
from Flotsam and Jetsam, Arizona, and they were killer. I love that first.
Doomsday for the Deceiver. Yeah, great bass playing on that.
Yep.
Which, once again, then the poor guy comes in the band and they don't even turn him on for Justice for All.
Right. And they called him New Kid for,
for
5 years. The whole run,
so glad when they finally, mended those fences of the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame and then the 30th anniversary.
30th anniversary was great.
Just so cool to see him back up there, man, because the guy's so...
Yeah.
He's like you said, forgotten, man, but
that's
that guy
what I'm saying, right?
is an incredible bass player. I don't know if you guys listened to the Newstead Metal album.
Mm-hmm. I did.
That was awesome, dude.
I really liked it.
Yeah.
I have a lot of respect for that dude. When you talk about the band being good with fans back then, when some of them weren't.
Right.
When somebody was drinking and somebody was doing whatever else, he was the front for, he was the face for them.
He
was
the
guy that was out and, for 2 hours standing next to the bus because I saw
every
him
meet and greet.
Stuff. Yeah, yeah.
Here's another thing, too. They would always close with Seek and Destroy, but they close with it now, but they play it straight through. Back then, they would do a 12-minute version where they have a big sing-along where James would drink beer with the crowd.
Right.
The whole time, Newstead was soloing.
Strumming along.
On the wah-wah pedal and stuff. What a great player, and almost the forgotten guy in the band.
Yeah, it's too bad.
As a result.
Yeah. But also, I get his decision, but
Yeah. I got to talk just quickly about the lyrics in Disposal or Damage Incorporated. Blood will follow blood. What a great line.
It's awesome.
Dying
He's written
time is
some
here.
Of the most metal lyrics ever. Just
here's one. I can't remember what the first line is, but don't fuck with Razorback. I don't even know what that means. It's like, is a Razorback
badass.
Fuck with Razorback? Hog?
So badass.
Why am I fucking with a Razorback?
Yeah,
I'm staying away from the Razorback.
It's like a sports thing. Isn't that the Arkansas?
I think I don't even know.
It's a college football team, right?
Yes.
I'm such a dork.
Good all in fucking no regrets.
That's another one. What
that's
a great
so
line.
That should be on a shirt or a tat if you have it. Yeah.
Which one of us hasn't said that about something in life? Good all in fucking no regrets. We're going to have to beep all this, but who cares, man?
Oh, wow. I'm sorry. I was dropping F-bombs earlier.
That's a real line, dude. That's a real line.
Talking about that angst earlier, just that.
Right.
That's just,
I'm talking about, you said you're a nerd because you knew that was, is it Alabama Razorbacks? Arizona Razorbacks?
Arkansas.
Arkansas, yeah.
I actually bought an Arkansas Razorback shirt just because it was a Razorback. Because I was Metallica. I had my Razorback. I'm wearing my Razorback shirt to the Metallica show tonight. Yeah, no one's going to notice, buddy. But yeah, so I think we've pretty much determined it's pretty close.
It's so close.
All across
the
board.
Like when you came to me about this concept, I was like, it's easy, but it's not.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. Yep. You know,
and that's what I said. It's very interesting because I've done this before with a couple of the guys just on a tour bus in the middle of the night talking. Yeah. But when you go through it, I mean, you have to pick a side, but there's no debate.
Right.
You know, they're both, like I said, made within a year and a half of each other.
So crazy.
That is completely insane.
And now, we were talking about the guy's age when they wrote these songs. It's just unbelievable.
Like I said, it's Beatles-type stuff.
It's, absolutely.
The amount of the great material the Beatles wrote at such a young age, it was like destined to be there, you know? Just a quick last couple things. Where were you when you found out that Cliff Burton had passed away, Brian?
Oh, man. I think I was in San Francisco with a buddy, and we heard it on the radio.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like it was, what would it have been? God, well, there wasn't a metal station there. Oh, well, it must have been KML or something like that.
There was a station?
Yeah, rock station. It wasn't metal, but yeah, that's how we heard. And I took it way harder than the dude I was with. He was like, oh, that sucks. And I'm like, no, dude, it really, really sucks.
It really sucks. I read it.
Yeah, and I was pretty... I cried when Randy Rhoads died.
Oh.
I think I got drunk when Cliff died.
You're old enough to do
that. A little bit older, so I was like, yeah, that sucks. Let's just get hammered and smoke a little...
little dude.
He would have smoked.
I read it in the newspaper. There was no, like you said, there was no, they might have said it on the radio, but no grapevine, no internet, nobody to tell you.
Randy in the newspaper.
Did you find?
Yeah,
so I did with the little blurb. Clifford Lee Burton dead at 24.
MTV would have just been like a little blurb. There was like MTV.
Right. But I don't even know if there was. We didn't have MTV in Canada, so it wasn't on there.
Yeah.
And I remember I was with my friend who's a huge. He was a techno guy. He loved Depeche Mode and stuff. And he made some kind of a really bad joke. I didn't even want to tell it. It's really bad. Like about when Cliff Burton passed away, and. I was so angry that I punched him in the face.
Oh, good. Shit, I was
good. And I remember he had a handful of change because he was going to buy a newspaper or some candy, and he made this horrible joke, which I didn't want to say, and I just went,
good.
Fell down in this puddle, and all his change, whatever. I was like, don't you ever talk about the burn again.
You did the Lord's work.
Yeah, good. I did. And it was just like, oh, man, like, what a horrible loss, right?
You know, it's so funny. The dude I was with was a Depeche Mode fan. The dude I said he didn't care as much. He absolutely, that's his number one band in life is Depeche Mode. It's so weird.
It's so funny.
What's the f***ing Depeche Mode and Metallica?
And Metallica,
they have
dudes.
A secret beef? We're finding out. Good, I'm glad he's dead. Whoa, dude.
Whoa, calm down, dude. That's not funny. That's not funny at all.
See, that's weird because I got into Metallica with
later.
Injustice for All.
Yeah.
You know, and obviously it's like, you know, you when you find out about Metallica, you obviously this extraordinary bass
oh, right.
player.
Yeah.
So you have to go back and like it's like one of those, God, what did I miss? Like look at this
right.
guy.
Right.
Like, did you when you went back and heard the earlier albums, were you aware that he had passed, that it was a different bass player?
When I got into Metallica, I saw the band. In the one video was the first time I saw him. I liked Jason because his hair was cool because he had it shaved on the sides. And then going back into their catalogs and finding, okay, Cliff Burton. And then, oh, he died. And wow, what an incredible player he was.
Yeah.
And just learning more about him, you know. So that was a weird kind of perspective.
Just going back
and just seeing this guy. He's, like you said, at 24 years old.
24.
The body of work that he created is just unmatched, you know. And
nobody to this day has played like Cliff Burton.
No.
Like Geezer Butler has a vibe of it, but he was not as technical as Cliff, you know.
When you go back to being, he wasn't like the face of Metallica, but he was kind of the, what did you call him earlier?
The musical mentor, the soul.
Almost.
From what everything James and Lars say is they taught him, taught them about melody.
You were saying that too.
Yeah.
He
was like, the soul of the band, the musical mentor.
I think the first time I actually heard of him was, didn't he write the poem To Live Is To Die?
To Live Is To Die. That was,
I think that's where it said lyrics by Cliff Burton.
Right.
That
was his last contribution to a Metallica record.
Which is awesome, which is a cool song. So we're going to come back and do Load and Reload.
That one might be a little bit harder.
That's be a much shorter show.
But I mean, let's just.
I'm going to have to do a lot of research.
Yeah.
I don't know those
I'm going to have to listen to it all the way through.
Well,
I mean, just once again, the way that these albums are tracked, it's very similar. It's like we've got to open with this. I just always found that very interesting with the same producer in the same studio, the same lineup. I wonder if they did that on purpose.
I was just going to ask that.
You know, I mean, did they say, we need a thrasher here because that was a thrasher? I don't think Metallica's that contrived, though.
Just happenstance.
Just happenstance,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Last memory, your first Metallica concert.
It was Puppets.
Puppets tour?
Yeah, yeah. Because I didn't get to see them on when
they were... Do you remember where it was?
Yeah, it was. It must have been the Cow Palace when they came back through. Yeah, it must have been.
They were doing arenas on the Master Tour?
I feel like.
Maybe with Ozzy?
With Ozzy.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, so they were opening for Ozzy.
Yeah.
Right. How about you, Frankie?
Okay, 1994 at Glen Helen Pavilion. Right outside of San Bernardino here.
I like to call it the Van Halen Pavilion.
Van Halen Pavilion.
It's like it's just, whenever I see it, it's
your theater now, whatever the corporate.
Which one's that? Is that where they did the US Festival? Yeah.
That was San Bernardino.
Glen Helen, I think it's Verizon Amphitheater now or something.
Yeah. They had the Ozfest there a couple years ago.
Yeah, they have had Ozfest there. Yeah. It was 1994. I think it was called like Shit in the Sheds Tour.
Summer Shed Tour. Yeah, like Summer that, Shit in the Sheds.
And it was originally supposed to be Metallica, Alice in Chains, Suicidal Tendencies, and Candlebox. Mm-hmm. And which I was psyched. This was my first real concert and my first time seeing Metallica, my favorite band. And I loved Alice in Chains. But literally like a couple days before, Lane had one of his episodes, I guess, and like had an overdose. So they were replaced by Fight, which Ron Halford's band. So, so that was it, Metallica, Fight,
featuring
Candlebox.
Russ Parrish and Steel Panther.
Yeah. So then that was it. And
that's
it was,
the one,
And they played... The God That Failed, which is one of my favorite Metallica
songs.
That's
obscure for 94.
Right, it really is. And I couldn't believe they played it because I'd never heard them play it live up to that. And that's one of my favorite Metallica songs because I love the opening, the bass intro, and the lyrics.
It's a grower,
and it's one of those, it's just one of those ones on the Black Album I don't think that gets the recognition it deserves.
This might be the topper. It was November 16th, 1986. Cliff died September 24th, 1986. It was like 8 weeks later.
Oh wow.
The third gig with Newstead.
Oh, damn.
Opening band was Metal Church.
You
win. It was in the Playhouse Theater in Winnipeg. And I'll never forget, Metal Church had about 3 feet of stage room where they're all four guys in the front row, just like they open a ton of bricks, down, and they're all banging their heads and they're all in a line and they can't move. And standing right next to me was the Mentors.
Oh, wow.
Because I could tell because they were wearing their Mentors masks, which were black KKK hooded pointy things. But I'll never forget that, man. I tried to record it. I had a recorder in my pocket. I turned it on. And then when I went back to listen to it after, all you could hear was...
So, your pants wrestling.
But that was it, man.
How was that show? I mean, just like...
Well, I was a huge Cliff fan.
Yeah.
Because I'm a bass player too.
Yep.
And I was supposed to see them that summer in Vancouver. It was Ozzy and Metallica. And the night we were supposed to go, Ozzy got sick and canceled. And I was like, well, there's Metallica's still there. Can't they play? Like, I'd rather see Master Puppets era Metallica than Shot in the Dark era Ozzy, right? And then, so I'm like, well, that's fine. I'm going to go see them in November in Canada. And then he passed away in September. So it was weird because I thought for sure they'd be canceled. But they, as you guys know the story, they went right in there and got Jason and just went right back to work.
I can't believe it was that fast.
It was that fast.
8 weeks.
8 weeks, dude. And I go back and look at the set list now, and it's very primitive. It's mostly, you know, it's mostly Kill 'Em All songs and a couple of Master songs. But, you know, they didn't have a lot to play back
then.
You know, there was a bass solo. There might have even been like some kind of weird drum solo. And it was just, but it was Metallica. And I skipped my water polo tournament because I was a water polo player in high school. And my friend Warren Rumpel, who Scott knows because Scott dissed him really bad. He knows the name Warren Rumpel. Warren Rumpel, Scotty and I'm talking about. Warren Rumpel went to the water polo tournament. I went to Metallica. He was really sad because he missed Metallica, and I was really sad because he banged the chick that I was trying to bang, named Tanis or Tanya or something. So both guys ended up winning on that weekend.
Yeah, medals forever.
You still win. Yeah.
There's plenty of water polo slots out there.
Exactly.
How many times do you get to see Metallica?
So many.
Water polo whores. I saw three of them walking into the building today, for God's sakes.
Thank you, guys.
Thanks, man.
That's cool.
Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday, dear you. Happy birthday to you. Yeah.
Woo. All right.
right. Like Jack Black just said, a happy birthday to Lars Ulrich. And a big thanks to Brian Posehn and Frankie Kazarian for helping us celebrate with a great conversation about one of our favorite bands, Metallica, Ride the Lightning versus Master of Puppets. Which is your favorite? Hit me up on the Twitter at Talk is Jericho and let me know. Make your choice. And let me know if you like the classic album Clash. We got a whole lot that we can do, taking two albums from the same band, from the same artist, and pitting them against each other with a different rotating cast of characters. So lots of fun. And speaking of fun, how many of you have already booked your cabins for Chris Jericho's Rock and Wrestling Rager at Sea, setting sail October 27th, 2018? If you are thinking about it, if you're on the fence, don't, because if you book by January 15th, you get to take a picture with the list with me, and I'll put you on the list. You know what happens when you book your cabin before January 15th, 2018, huh? You know what happens? You're going to make the list. That's what's going to happen. Remember, as little as $150 holds your cabin at ChrisJerichoCruise.com, and everything is included in the price of a cabin. All the food and all the activities, live podcasts, free, stand-up comedy, free, meet and greets, free, taking a picture, free, getting an autograph, free, all the concerts, free, the Sea of Honor, Ring of Honor tournament, it's free when you reserve a cabin. It's all-inclusive, man. All of that's included. If you all you got to pay for is alcohol and gambling, and if you don't do either of those, if you're a teetotaler, then everything on the cruise is free of charge as long as you reserve your cabin. Remember, book your cabin by January 15th. You still got 3 weeks or so. You'll get a picture of me with the list, and I'll put you on the list if you want it, all right? You can film that. And you'll be able to come hang on the ship with all these incredible guests. Now, remember this. This is a cruise ship. It's not a fortress. There's no barricade between all the talent and all everyone, all the guests and the cruise. We're all hanging out together. I know this because I did it on the Kiss Cruise. I met people the first night that I was friends with by the end of the whole shebang. I'm still friends with some of the people that I met on the Kiss Cruise. You can have the same thing on Chris Jericho's Rock and Wrestling Rager at See, featuring Jim Ross and Jerry the King Lawler hosting. SoCal Val is the special guest cruise director. Mick Foley, Ricky the Dragon Steamboat, Rey Mysterio, Cyrus and Paul Lazenby from Killing the Town are going to be going live against the Keeping It 100 crew of Conan, Disco Inferno, and Shane Helms. Tim and Dave from Beyond the Darkness are going to be scaring the pants off you. Brad Williams, Ron Funches, Jim Brewer making you laugh your arses off because they're going to be there. Some of the greatest comedians in the world. Busted Open Radio, Dave LaGreca will be there. We'll get him working. Raven's going to be there. So many others. Rock and Roll. All right. Jim Brewer's Loud and Rowdy. Great rock and roll band. Phil Campbell and the Bastard Sons, straight from Motorhead, right onto the ship. Fozzy, Judas, top 10 for 9 weeks. Painless getting ready to come out. We're going to be even bigger a year from now. King, The Dives featuring Evan Stanley. The Dave Spivak Project. Go check out his new video, Get Out of My House, on YouTube. It's got 1,000 views. It's a great tune. Go check that out. The Cherry Bombs are going to be there. The Darlings of Rock and Roll. What a show they put on. The world's greatest female AC/DC cover band, Shoot to Thrill. The world's greatest Aussie tribute band, Blizzard of Ozzy. It's not Ozzy. I got people going, can I meet Ozzy on the cruise? Ozzy's not going to be there. Blizzard of Ozzy is going to be there. And of course, the coup de grace, the pièce de résistance, Ring of Honor, presenting the first ever Sea of Honor tournament aboard the ship. Matches happening in the middle of the ocean on the cruise ship. First time ever. I had to have a team of engineers come make sure that the ring could be secured on deck. They agreed. It's happening. And who's going to be in the tournament? Ring of Honor World Heavyweight Champion Dalton Castle will be there. And also the Young Bucks will be there. How about the Bullet Club? The Young Bucks. The Villain, Marty Scurll. The American Nightmare, Cody. Don't call him Rhodes. Cody's wife, Brandi Rhodes, will be there. The Briscoe Brothers are going to be there. And the winner of the Sea of Honor tournament gets a world heavyweight title shot. Obviously, Dalton Castle, if he's still the champion, he won't be on in the tournament, but he might lose by then. Who's going to win? And we got more great talents being announced. Maybe Frankie Kazarian will be announced. Who knows? Stay tuned right here. More talent being announced as well. Of course, don't forget, too, the Unprofessional Wrestling Podcast. Colt Cabana, Marty DeRosa doing a Mystery Science Theater 3000 on bad wrestling matches. It's going to be hilarious as well. So much great things happening. Book your cruise before January 15th at Chris Jericho Cruise.com. And also, don't forget the Alpha versus Omega, January 4th, the Tokyo Dome, Chris Jericho versus Kenny Omega. Subscribe to New Japan World to see that match live. And don't forget to go pick up your Alpha Club shirt at Hot Topic and HotTopic.com. All right. That's it. No more shilling. Thank you so much. I hope you had a great Christmas. Thank you to my great sponsors, ddpyoga.com. Go to ddpyoga.com/Jericho. Take advantage of 20% off all the DDPY DVDs, the app, and all related merch. Save money at TrueCar. Peace of mind. You save peace of mind. You save money. You save time. So many great things happening. Thank you so much for listening. Keep listening for the 60-second AP News headlines coming up next and coming up on Friday, the last show of 2017. And also the last show on Podcast One. We'll talk a little bit more about that. The show will continue, though. Got a huge new deal for 2018. You're going to be super excited. But the last show of 2017, Crazy Charles Wyant. He's a comedian, but he's probably most famous for the crazy stunts that he does for his Facebook watch show, Naked Beekeeping, wrestling alligators in a pond, hanging underwater with anacondas. Come hear the stories and the antics of Crazy Charles Wyant. He's completely, what is he? Crazy. He's going to be here on Friday as we close out 2017 and steamroll into 2018. What a year it's going to be. I'm excited. You're excited. In the meantime and in between time, we'll see you Friday. Stay hard. Stay hungry. Peace, love, and hugs, and a big yeah, boy. Ah, yeah.